Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. The people I interview tend to be talented, resourceful, or resilient, or a combination of each. One might describe them as can-do people. Sara Niazi is not only a can-do, but is a has-done and a will-do. She's worked in many roles, and between jobs, a dozen or so years ago, she set up Living London, leading walking tours that she called wanderings, seeking out hidden gems, in part to satisfy her own curiosity and in finding others to share her discoveries. She's a recent recipient of a Winston Churchill Fellowship and travelled to New York and San Francisco seeking out other, what she calls, renegade guides, those who have a similar passion for exploration and sharing of knowledge. She's returned home to Tooting in southwest London and written and published the Renegade Guide Handbook. Tell us, how are you taken by the idea of becoming not only a guide but a guide aficionado?
I don't know if I'd call myself a guide aficionado. So I was born in Tooting in South London. I've lived there pretty much all my life. I've done quite a few stints in sort of different cities, both in the UK and abroad, but I always return to Tooting.
You went to college?
I went to Goldsmiths. So I did my undergrad in Goldsmiths and then I went back to Goldsmiths after over 10 years. Last year to do my master's. So South London, very much rooted. Other places, so I was living in Birmingham for a year and a half, and I've only recently moved back to London. Before that, I was in Brighton for a year. Done lots of random walking stints in like places like Marseille and South Korea, and more recently, I guess, New York and San Francisco. But yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like I'm a Londoner through and through. I love London. I don't think there's anywhere as exciting to walk.
Okay, what about, you know, your mum and dad and brothers and sisters? Were they enthusiastic walkers and they got you out going for a walk?
Or
where did the desire come from to be a discoverer of your own town?
I think my dad's definitely an explorer. So he grew up in Lahore, in a rural village, and he was the only boy in his family that went to school. He was from a farming background. He went to university, and then one of his first jobs outside of university was working for the Pakistani Railways, and he loved going on adventures. So he'd get the train and end up in a random city in Pakistan and walk around, and sometimes he'd have to walk 5 or 6 miles to come home. And so I think he's always loved adventure, and I think it was his love for adventure and exploring and wandering and freedom that really brought him to London in the 60s. So when he came to the UK, he used to love exploring here too, so we'd often go to national parks and, you know, we go for walks, and even though he was really busy trying to make ends meet, I think for him it was really important that we sort of connected to the physical spaces that make up, you know, where we were living.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. Oh, I have so many brothers and sisters. So I have 4 brothers and 2 sisters. They're all very different, very scattered.
Well, what I'm interested in, was your going out walking an escape to get away from a crowded, crowded home?
I had 4 brothers. I mean, yeah. I did grow up with 4 brothers and 2 sisters, and I think partly, yes. I think, you know, we were very, very cramped, and I think for me, like, getting out of the home was just a way to avoid conflict, but also to preserve my mental health, or what, you know, what remained left of my mental health growing up with all these siblings.
I'm guessing that you didn't start off as a walking guide.
Oh, gosh, no. I've had so many different jobs. I used to work as a pharmacy assistant, a play worker, a caretaker, artistic director for a bit, assistant curator, community organiser. I used to run a centre for elderly people in Tooting. So, yeah, I've had lots of really different jobs. My most recent job was as a community stories lead for an organisation called Slow Ways. I think that was the most enjoyable job that I've ever had in my life. I kind of feel like I dreamed it up and then manifested it, and then it came into existence. And it was the perfect job. The organisation I worked for, Slow Ways, is trying to create a national walking network that connects all the towns, villages and cities in the UK. And so my job was to support other people, share stories about place and walking, but also I got to test out walking routes across the country. So one day I'd be walking, you know, in the Black Mountains of Wales, the next I could be walking in the marshes in Norfolk, and it was just like the most extraordinary job.
How do you feel as a woman of colour walking alone? You're not walking alone. You're not walking alone at the moment. But, I mean, it's clear that you're not fearful.
I mean, I think my default is definitely walking alone. Even though I'm a tour guide and I spend a lot of time walking with people, I think I just really enjoy the freedom. You know, I think I walk in quite a chaotic way sometimes, and I think walking alone allows for that. You can, you know, take an hour break. You can kind of, you know, have a little nap on a hill. You can really kind of be very free. To be fair, I used to wear a hijab for the longest time, and being a Muslim woman walking alone is different to being sort of a woman of colour. There are so many sort of different variables, and there are times where I was walking as a Muslim woman of colour in certain areas where I didn't feel very safe. You know, you'd see graffiti, you'd see, you know, swastikas, you'd see, you just feel like maybe this isn't, you know, the best place to be walking. But I guess my default is always to, and this is something that has been taught to me, but also kind of things that I think, something that I keep coming back to, and it's this idea of just walking in a place like you own it. Just having the confidence and kind of thinking the best of people. You know, that's not to say that I've not had negative experiences, but I don't think you can let those negative experiences define you. Whereas I think for me, most of my experiences have been largely really, really positive. And I've kind of got that positive reinforcement where every time I've gone out, I've met really cool people and I've discovered really cool places, and it's just sort of kept me going. It's just...
Well, something you say in the handbook, which we're about to get to, is that you say that if you walk with intention, it makes your journey so much more meaningful. But also, if you walk with intention, you give off confidence. And perhaps that's a protective shield as well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I remember when this question was asked by someone else, and one of the answers I came up with was actually, you know, sometimes it's a really powerful place to be, because you kind of have this mutual curiosity, and that's how you get talking to people. Like, you know, I remember what the first slow-ways walk I did was from Canvey Island to Leon Sea, and on the way I met all sorts of really interesting people. I met a local counsellor, I met, you know, a world swimming teacher who was recovering from alcohol addiction, and often, you know, they were curious as to, you know, what I was doing there with my big camera, taking pictures and looking really enthused, and equally I was curious about them. And so then that kind of sparks the conversation. And so, you know, I think sometimes difference, it can be a bridge into kind of connecting and getting to know people from sort of very different backgrounds and worlds. And
From what I understand, you've never actually taken a course in guiding.
No, guilty.
And quite rightly, you call your handbook to renegade guiding. Yeah. Is that because you're a bit of a disruptor, or that you don't like the idea of accreditation, or you think you have a very low opinion of life as a blue guide?
All of those things. No, not at all.
So where's that come from?
I think it's really interesting because the term renegade was actually, renegade guide was coined by my friend Jeff Simmons. And Jeff Simmons, he came from Northern Ireland. He's much older than I am. He's an aficionado tour guide of Tooting. Like, everyone knows him. He knows everything. But he's not a blue badge guide. You know, he's had a really rich life, very interesting backstory. But often blue badge guides would turn their noses up at him. And he said that he started calling himself the renegade guide. And for him, it was a way to step into his power and really take control of the fact that, you know, he was sharing stories from the fringes. He was sharing stories of community. He was sharing stories that were interested to him. This was a passion project. The blue badge course is quite inaccessible. It's £10,000 to start off with. You know, they share a very specific version of history. There are lots of rules. I don't really like rules. A lot of what I do is about connecting people to contemporary stories of place and people. And so I think it just, for me, it didn't really align with what I was actually trying to do, which is, you know, taking people to places like Dalston or, you know, Peckham, and sharing stories of interesting people I've met. Yes, history, but also, you know, social history, also projects that are happening at the moment.
I mean, how I got involved in walking and leading led walks and things was through my efforts to try to persuade people to see the world in a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, I did have an agenda and probably still carry an agenda every time I do it. What about you? You've actually got a manifesto at the back of your book.
I do, yeah. God, guilty.
So there is a bit of an agenda.
I think the way I came into guiding was incredibly unusual, and I think a lot of people come into guiding in quite an unusual and unconventional way. And, you know, for me, sort of living London started out as a passion project. I started it out in about 2013.
Living London was around something you called wanderings.
Yeah.
And I always think wanderings are something that you set out without a destination in mind, and yet guiding is constraining people to a specific route.
Totally. And I think...
What's going on there?
I think I use the term wandering in a bit of disruptive way, because there is so much space for wandering on my tours. Even though there is a set route in mind, people get a chance to explore on their own, to have a wander around all the places we stop off. You know, it's a bit of a co-produced experience at the end of the day, because if people want to see a certain thing or contribute something, I guess it's wondering in many ways. It's not just physical wondering, but the wonderings of the imagination. It's the wonderings of kind of enabling people to be able to share their stories and share places that matter to them. And so I also like the idea of wondering, because it felt a little bit less precious than a walking tour. I'm a bit weird about language. I still don't feel like tour guide. I don't feel like I'm a tour guide or a renegade guide. I don't know what I feel like I am. I think I'm just someone who likes walking and talking to people. But in terms of your question about an agenda, well, when I first started out, I think my first tour I led about 10 years ago, and I literally just did that because I was between jobs, and you know, I'd spent years working on this passion project, which is all about connecting up hidden gems and sharing stories I'd collected over like 10 years of really interesting people who had connections to certain spaces. And so I think for me it was like, okay, how can I make a bit of money, but how can I share a lot of these places? I think I was charging about £3 per tour, so it wasn't any way that I was going to make a living during living London. I also wanted my friends and people who've lived in London their whole lives to kind of get out of their neighbourhoods and explore different neighbourhoods and connect and bring people together. And so for me it was a form of community building, it was a form of keeping in touch with people, it was a form of, you know, just sharing this sort of knowledge that I'd acquired through quite a strange means of just going into places and talking to people and finding out what, you know, sparked them to connect or be part of.
So you were kind of working with them to retell their story.
Yeah.
And of course I always think that, you know, a guided walk is actually a bit like a story, because it's a bit like a narrative arc,
totally,
isn't it?
Totally, yeah.
There's a lot of connection. And
exactly.
Do you find that when you have been guiding yourself that you've needed to not only recognise the route, I'm assuming you have done that.
Yeah,
secondly, that you kind of rehearse what you're going to say,
or
written a script. Yes. Do you find you're someone who needs a script?
I think I always have the bare bones of a script, and then I often 99% of the time go off script. And one thing I learned from this project is like, just do a few tours and do them really, really well. And so I think going forward, that's something I want to do. So I do have a bit of a script. I often, because, you know, this project's off the back of Living London, which is all about collecting up over 1,000 hidden gems, I'll always bring in other places and other stories. And so in that sense, it is really interesting, because you're constantly building the narrative and building the story. And given any group, you know, if you've got a different group and a different day, it's about figuring out what interests them and really kind of playing to those interests and hopefully providing information and stories that, you know, they can kind of use or benefit from.
Okay, so let's get on to the Renegade Handbook. What prompted you to even think that anyone would want to read a handbook? Was it you just thinking, I better get all my notes down that I've sort of learned?
I think it was a couple of things. I think London is changing. Yeah, in part, I think Living London has become a bit of a historical archive of places that used to exist, you know, really interesting, quirky businesses or community projects that have not been able to survive in the face of rising rents and gentrification. And I think for me, I was having a bit of a moral dilemma, because I felt like I was somehow contributing to it, and it felt like what I was doing was a bit extractive, especially when I was doing tours in Tooting. And I had one negative experience with a family, an American family, and I remember just feeling like, you know, tours are personal. You're showing people places that you care about. You're introducing them to people that you really respect. And the family, you know, they were disinterested. They were quite disrespectful. And I stopped doing that tour after that. I just thought, actually, I feel like I'm contributing to this sort of change in my community, or this change that I'm not really feeling like I'm part of, or I'm not feeling so positive about at that time. Yeah, this prompted lots of questions, like, you know, how can I be an ethical tour guide? How can I make sure that the people who come to my tours feel included, but at the same time I'm including the actual community itself? Whose stories do we share? Why am I taking people to these very specific places? How did I choose those places? So it was a bit of a personal kind of, like, deep dive into things that I never really had time to really think about. And then I wondered if other tour guides had thought about all these things. And so I did a lot of sort of digging, and I thought, you know, especially now with Airbnb experiences and TripAdvisor, anyone can really be a guide. And I just thought, how are we ensuring that things are being done in an ethical way, and, you know, that communities aren't suffering off the back of a few tour guides making money. But yeah, so this kind of prompted me to apply for Churchill Fellowship. Churchill Fellowship offers grants to UK individuals who want to create some kind of change through pioneering research projects in their field. And I applied and I didn't get it. So I reapplied the next year when I was at Slow Ways, because these questions felt more and more urgent. And I thought about going to sort of New York and San Francisco, and basically I really wanted to meet lots of other tour guides and ask them questions about their practice and kind of really get to the bottom of some of these kind of moral dilemmas that I was kind of facing. And so second time I was really lucky. They accepted my proposal. I went for an interview and they seemed to think what I was doing was quite timely and interesting. And so yeah, and so then I spent 2 months in the US just interviewing different tour guides, storytellers, community organizers, going on lots of different walks, thinking a lot about, you know, what makes a tour, interviewing every single tour guide that I met. And I came back and I was so overwhelmed. I had over like 40 hours of audio recordings with every single sort of person that I met, and I just thought, okay, I need to create a report out of this. And it took me about, I think, 4 months to create the handbook. So I decided to create a handbook because I just thought, wouldn't it be great to have like a field guide, which isn't really kind of a definitive guide, but it's more kind of a collection of case studies, of stories, of ideas, of advice, wisdom that other renegade guides had sort of collected. And it's this idea that actually there are lots of people who are doing things in new ways, but there's no way that they're communicating with each other. And so I wanted to kind of channel a lot of this information and create something that was quite tangible and could also just give people very sort of clear advice on how to work in a more intentional and ethical way, and also to question what they do and why they do it and who they do it for.
Great. I'm a wannabe guide. I'm a wannabe renegade.
Yeah.
So how do I get hold of this handbook?
So you can download it off my website for free. So www.livinglondon.org, and it's under Renegade Guides. You can also download it from the Churchill Fellowship website as my report. You can also buy it, a physical copy, off my website too. So those are three ways at the moment.
And you chose New York and San Francisco.
Yeah.
Why those two cities?
Yeah, so there are a few reasons. I've never been to America before I kind of applied for this funding and went as part of this project.
You went during the campaign.
Yeah, so it was a really surreal time to be there. I remember the day that Trump got elected, I was on a Love San Francisco tour with a group of like extremely conservative people, and it was just the most surreal experience. There were cars honking their horns, waving their Make America Great flags, and you know, up until the, and then I went on another tour the day after, and it was a South Asian radical history tour, and the tour creator kind of asked us all, how are you feeling? You know, it's gonna be a really difficult few years. Trump's been re-elected, and it was so somber in comparison to the other sort of mood on the tour, and it was such a strange time to be there. You really felt that sense of division, and you know, I think it was a really powerful time to be doing this project too, because it's all about listening, and it's all about kind of like being on the ground. And you know, the people I met were really rooted to communities in New York and San Francisco. That being said, I think New York and San Francisco are bubbles. They're very liberal, and I chose them because I think they're undergoing a lot of the changes, the same changes that are happening in London. You know, rising rents, communities being displaced, you know, places of cultural importance kind of being eroded. They're also very walkable. I don't drive, I can't drive, and so I think I wanted to be in places that I could access and navigate easily via public transport or by walking. And they've also got very difficult histories, and so in terms of tour guiding, it was interesting for me to kind of learn, well, what are people sharing and what are they withholding? Who are the people that are sharing the story of the city? So I think that those were the main reasons. I also get a lot of tourists from San Francisco in particular coming on my East London walk, and they were saying the same thing. They're like, we've lived in San Francisco our whole lives, now we can't afford to stay. And I just thought, this is exactly like how I'm feeling and how a lot of my peers are feeling. Like everyone, I've seen so many people just leave the city one by one, especially people who, you know, work in sort of creative industries or who don't make a lot of money. You know, I feel like soon London's going to be a city for just the rich, and I think that will change the very sort of the spirit of it. But at the same time, the great thing that I took away from this project is it actually left me feeling more empowered than...
The other thing I was going to ask is, OK, you've written and published the handbook. For me, it's almost as though you must be utterly bored of guiding.
I am,
and
yes,
writing about it.
I did do a workshop on Monday week with Westminster University, and that was super fun. And I was basically working with the architecture lecturers and getting them to create a tour a marylebone through coffee. And that's something I really enjoy, workshopping other people's tools and kind of sharing some ideas and tips. So I think that's something I definitely want to do more of. And so again, I think I really want to kind of go back into working in sort of the creative walking space.
Now I am going to put you on the spot and say you're going to recommend two walks. Only two.
Only two, gosh. London walks.
They can be anywhere. They could be conceptual walks.
Oh, conceptual walks. Okay, we're getting meta. The first one is the walk I did last week, and it's one of my favourite walks. It's like it starts off at Warwick Avenue, and it ends in Notting Hill, and it's just a really interesting walk. You kind of, you know, it takes in skate parks, the oldest garden centre in London, and there's just so many stories connected to this walk, and it's really interesting to see the way that London changes, kind of going from this incredibly wealthy area down to, you know, the Trellick Tower graffiti yards. I love that. I love that, you know, the story just changes, the narrative changes through the route.
Don't worry, you've done one, which is, you've only got to do one more.
So my second favourite walk, I really love the walk from Hastings to Rye. I've done so many walks all over, you know, Wales, Scotland, England, but that, there's something about that walk. You're kind of close enough to London to do it in a day. And I think I did this walk on a really beautiful autumn day, and I think I must have come across one person in 11 miles. And you're walking through glens, there's no network, you know, it's so varied. You're walking through sort of flat farmland, you're walking along a river, you get to the beach, and I just think it's one of the most... It's quite a varied walk, and then you get to Rye, and Rye is just this really beautiful, very picturesque sort of town. Of all the slow-ways walks that I did, and I did some really incredible ones in the West Highlands and, you know, in the Cambria Mountains in Wales, but that was one that just struck me, and I think it was just a beautiful day for it, and I was on my own, and, you know, I wasn't wearing the right footwear, and there were so many things that could have gone wrong that didn't go wrong, and I remembered getting to Rye just before sunset, and just feeling like, wow, we live in such an incredibly beautiful country.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Sara Niazi. If you've any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.